Welcome to Talk is Jericho's The Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll, the exclusive home of the much anticipated, always appreciated Duff McKagan joke of the week.
This Jericho, Duff McKagan calling. English 101 here. A colon, you know, can change the whole meaning of a sentence. For example, Jane ate her friend's sandwich. There's one. Second, Jane ate her friend's colon. You see the difference? Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Oh, my gosh. That one was absolutely terrible. Oh, but thanks to Duff for delivering it anyways. We all love you here at Talk is Jericho. Maybe if you spend as much time working on jokes as he does touring, like Guns N' Roses are doing this summer, he'd be a much better comedian. Of course, I'm just kidding, because Guns N' Roses are hitting the Middle East, Europe, and North America. Dates start June 1st in Abu Dhabi, and Fozzy's spring tour is underway. We started last night with a sold-out show in Bloomington, Illinois. We're playing another show tonight in Hobart, Indiana. That one is almost sold out, as is Milwaukee tomorrow night, Saturday. And then, of course, Sunday we're in Cincinnati, and Monday we're in Johnson City, Tennessee. The first leg rolls through April 17th. Lots of those dates are sold out, especially the VIPs. But don't worry, we added more as we're touring the West Coast with Ugly Kid Joe starting May 4th in Los Angeles. And we're going to Las Vegas, Albuquerque, Houston, Dallas, all the way to Tampa, Florida. The full list and ticket information is on FozzyRock.com. Come rock with us and come to the VIP meet and greet. It's one of the best in the biz. 9 VIPs are sold out on this tour, so go to FozzyRock.com. And make sure to grab one for the cities where they're still available. We meet you, we take pictures with you, sign autographs, play a private sound check for you. It's a lot of fun. So hit up FozzyRock.com and we'll see you on the road. All right, today on the show, it's another great pod that we recorded live on the Jericho Cruise Four Leaf Clover. Of course, the Five Alive is sold out. To get on the wait list, go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com. And this show today is all about death matches, and this panel is stacked. We got Sabu, arguably the pioneer of the death match. Dr. Luther, deathmatch expert, had many crazy matches against Sabu in FMW in Japan and brought the deathmatch to South Africa. Matt Cardona, the king of the deathmatch. And Ruby Soho, who just had a banger of a street fight deathmatch on AEW Rampage against my girls Ty Mello and Anna Jay with her partner, Willow Nightingale. Ruby's going to tell us all about that, including the interesting reaction she got from fans due to all the blood in that match. Ruby was covered from head to toe. And, of course, I'm no stranger to the deathmatch either. I had a bloody one against Nick Gage at AEW a couple years ago. So we're talking all about the weapons used in the ring, like glass, light tubes, pizza cutters, thumbtacks, barbed wire, and toothpick-covered giant Q-tips. Ugh. We got stories about fan riots and attacks, all the things that have been thrown at us. Lots of great stories today, so let's get started. Deathmatch is live from the Chris Jericho Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea, Four Leaf Clover, right here, right now, on Talk is Jericho. Want to talk about hardcore wrestling, want to talk about death matches with some of the pioneers of the art and some of the newer people involved. So it's going to be a good one. So let's invite on stage, we'll start off with the legendary Sabu is here. One of the pioneers of the death match, Dr. Luther is here. Ruby Soho from a female perspective. And then, of course, the king of the death match, Matt Cardona. How about Sabu? One guy loves ECW. But let's start talking about the form of hardcore wrestling, and I guess you'd say death matches. And I think the first guy that I can remember from my career that was really doing this was, of course, Sabu. You were kind of a pioneer of this form of wrestling, the hardcore, the death match, all that sort of thing.
Well, so was Dr. Luther. He was right along with me.
That's right.
And we were understudies of Onita, Osushi Onita. So actually, he gets the credit for that.
Now, Onita kind of brought this form of wrestling from Puerto Rico. Is that kind of where he got it from? Because you guys were kind of...
He got it from Puerto Rico,
right,
yes.
You guys were FMW originals back like in 1990, 91.
Yes, Frontier Martial Arts Wrestling, yes.
So was that the first time you'd gone to Japan, was with Onita and FMW?
Yes, yeah. It was my first trip, my first break, yes.
And that was through your uncle, right?
Yeah, well, Onita called my uncle and wanted him to come for a tag team tournament and said that he could bring anybody for his partner. And he goes, I'll bring my nephew. And he goes, it don't matter who, just anybody to do the job. And so he brought me in, and the rest is history. You know?
So what's it like for you, Len, when you come from Calgary? And obviously, you know, we're Stampede wrestling fans. We love the Hart brothers, and we love Dynamite Kid and Dave Boy Smith and kind of this real technical style of wrestling. And the first time we go to Japan, it's to FMW, which, like we said, Frontier Martial Arts Wrestling, which was brand new, but it was very much known for bleeding and barbed wire and brawls and fights. I remember going there going, this is Japanese wrestling? I never really thought, where's the holds and the moonsaults?
Well, the one thing is, Stampede Wrestling is what we grew up on. You forget, though, they had a lot of coal miners' glove matches. They had the first ever ladder matches. They did a lot of, like, bleeding in Calgary at the time, too. So there was some of that elements. But one thing I think I had when I went there is I was very naive. I didn't know who any of these people were. So I was never nervous walking into anything because I didn't know what I was getting into.
And same here.
You have to watch, like when you get there, obviously they have you in a couple of prelim matches early on, and then I would just watch the main events, and I was like, this stuff is crazy. Like, I've never seen stuff like that. But you just roll with it, right? That's how you.
But only the main event was crazy. The rest
crazy,
of the show.
Crazy, though, yeah.
The rest of the show was normal wrestling, you know.
And let's talk about Onita. Was so over. I remember when we went there, he was so popular. He knew exactly how to get the crowd. Do you want to talk a little bit about him as a performer?
He was like Japanese Hulk Hogan, really. Like, everywhere he went, everybody knew him. It didn't matter what he did. The fact he'd cry after the matches, and that would get over so much, too. And he made a lot of stars along with him as well. I mean, Hayabusa became a huge star.
Yes, me.
And that was his understudy.
Yeah, he would, after his matches, would go into the ring, and all the fans would come gather around ringside.
Whoa.
And he would pour water over his head. And it's okay, brother, it's the ocean. He would pour water over his head and he would cry. And the idea of crying was to show how much
respect
he had for his fans, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Did you guys ever grow up watching this FMW style or like the Puerto Rico or anything like that?
I would definitely see it in all like the PWI magazines and stuff like that. And I had all like the figures, of course, because I collect the figures. So it was cool too. It's weird that I'm on this stage. What am I doing on the same stage as Sabu? It doesn't make any sense.
Agreed.
Thank you. I was certainly a fan.
But it's funny because you've made kind of this another career for yourself by getting heat as being king of the death match. But you've had some crazy death matches.
I've actually had one death match, but that's the thing, because I've learned from you, you take something and you run with it, right? So that's my gimmick. I'm the death match king, but I've only done one, but it was a great death match against Nick Gage, who he sliced the f*** out of me.
He carved me up.
I still got glass in my back. I'm serious.
Nick,
had one hardcore death match?
One death match.
One. I thought you had thousands. I had no idea.
I did.
Holy
I work Sabu.
That's the deal. Got to work. You know how
now,
to
Ruby,
work.
Ruby, you've had some crazy death match. That's why I asked you, because Nick didn't make it on board. And I thought, well, let's talk to you from a female's perspective. You just had a guess. She just had an excellent death match with Willow versus my girls, Anna and Ty. Do you feel, because these matches are crazy, do you feel because being women that you have a spotlight on you or a microscope on you when you do these matches, you have something you have to kind of live up to?
It's been really interesting to see because I did a few death matches in my indie career, but I'd never done anything hardcore or anything since I'd been on TV. And so after that street fight, the response I got was very interesting to see how many people were upset at the fact that I was bleeding as much as I was because I was a female. I understand if, you know, death matches aren't your thing or hardcore matches aren't your thing, if that's just not your style, but if you can't come up with a reason other than the fact that I'm a woman that you don't like that I'm bleeding, kindly f*** off.
And once again, you guys went for it too with tacks and barbed wire and all that sort of thing. But let's the introduction of barbed wire matches. And Sabu obviously had
some of the craziest ones I've ever seen. Actually, Eddie Kingston and I had a barbed wire match that I watched yours, one of the ones you had in ECW, just to get some ideas from. Lenny obviously had some as well. Let's talk a little bit about that when they were first, when you guys were first told, like, hey, tonight you're having a barbed wire match. Was that first in Japan for you, Sabu, or was that ECW?
Japan. It was my second tour of Japan, and my uncles were with me at the time. I was there alone, and they go, tonight's a barbed wire match. I go, oh, sweet. Like, I'm going to try my hardest, and I'll probably never see another one again. So I'm going to try my hardest, and I was wrong. I tried a little too hard, and they confused that with loving it. And I never loved it. I could do it because that's what I was faced with, you know. But I never loved it. But the first barbed wire match came out of nowhere. I had no idea, no build up for it, no idea that this tonight's barbed wire match. Oh, cool. You know.
What are we supposed to do with this thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I remember we had one in Canada. Me and Beef Wellington. That's actually what's his name, Beef Wellington.
I remember him.
Also known as Biff Wellington.
Biff Wellington.
Only in wrestling, right? And it was 1993, and we were wrestling in Calgary. It was kind of like in the ashes of Stampede at the Victoria Park Pavilion.
Tiny place.
So he wanted to do something to up the house, so he and I had a barbed wire match, and it was such a controversy. Because it was possibly the first barbed wire match in Canadian history.
And Calgary had a commission, so it was a big thing.
Big deal. So the Boxing Wrestling Commission, which would kind of regulate you and tell you what you could and couldn't do. So what they said was they would allow us to have the barbed wire match, but one side of the barbed wire would be clipped, one side of the ring. We forgot which side was clipped. Is it that one? Is it this one? And as you know, when you get thrown into the barbed wire, it sticks and it catches you and it sticks in your hair. And I remember like, what the f*** are we doing? I think I got paid like $150, which for the night was a bonus. It was like we got paid double. We had probably 250 people instead of 100.
Canadian,
so we drew,
though, right?
Yeah, Canadian, yeah. Canadian <money. laughs> But just the whole thought of like, what do we do? I'll throw you into the barbed wire and see what happens, because like, there's no way of really knowing. It's just, you can't judge how you're going to take a bump in a barbed wire, right, Sabu?
Right. It's take it by ear and see what happens. Yeah. Exactly. See how much you can take. You know.
Have you guys had with the barbed wire that you guys use? Anna has it around her arm and that sort of thing. Did that catch you at all in the matches you guys had?
I was not on the receiving end of that barbed wire. That was Willow. But yeah, it's crazy how some things that you are anticipating to hurt don't hurt as bad, and then the things that you don't anticipate hurting really bad are the things that suck. Like chairs, for example, getting hit in the back with a chair is like getting back chopped by God. Like, it's just, it hurts, so, it stings so bad. I would rather fall into thumbtacks than getting hit in the back of the chair.
Man, did you do barbed wire matches too?
Yeah, did a lot there. I did a pay-per-view in Portland. I did the first ever barbed wire match in South Africa. Wow. So I did quite a bit. And like, thank you.
Luther!
And sometimes, like you're talking about hitting the barbed wire, it gets weird. Like, I got thrown in because they would take the ropes off and just put barbed wire around the whole thing, like three ropes of barbed wire. I hit it with my back and it unwound. So I was hanging in the midair off, and it was enough that like I couldn't get any momentum to get myself back up. Like, I had to get the young boys and young girls to try to like push me up at the time. That was a little scary because you're like stuck, and it's just stuck in you at that time. Like, I couldn't go anywhere, so that was one of the weirdest. Like, talking about hitting it, you have no idea what's happening.
You were lucky, though, because as Dr. Luther, the character you were, kind of, it was like a Silence of the Lambs, Hannibal Lecter type thing, and you were a full coverall.
That doesn't help much.
No, it's, I was going to say, it's actually worse, because then I'm stuck on it.
Yeah.
Like, it's not coming off at all. So.
It's like having long hair.
The one idea that I took from you, Sabu, was when you did the barbed match, and it ripped your tights, or your, what do you call them, the bottoms?
Wrestling pants.
Yeah, the wrestling pants. The Arabian wrestling pants, yes. The silk wrestling pants. But it ripped it completely open, and it just looked so much more visual to see that your wrestling pants were actually torn apart by this barbed wire.
That was a work. I worked that.
Oh, really?
I knew it. I knew that would make someone like you say, wow.
We're working each other up here.
And I don't like telling my tricks, but that was one of them.
This is actually great to have Sabu up here talking, because a lot of times he doesn't really, he was known for not saying a lot. So we appreciate having you up here telling any of your stories.
You guys made me feel very at ease, and I'm super glad I came. I was regretting it up until I got on the boat.
Something else, since we're talking with Sabu, obviously it's something that you see in every single match now. Not every single match, we see it on every single show usually, which is the table bump.
Yes.
Right here, this is the guy that started it. From what I can recall, you were the first guy that were doing the bumps to the tables. Tell us how that kind of all started.
Well, I wasn't the first one to use a table, but I would say I was the first one to use the table as like part of my moveset. You know, and how it got started is I wrestled, me and my uncle wrestled Luther and Hannibal one day, and we lost. And no big deal, but my uncle said, get back in the ring, get your heat back. I go, what do you want me to do? He goes, think of something. And I looked around and said, how about I moonsault the table? And he goes, what's that? I go, I'll show you. It went from there. That went from there. It was a complete accident, not a plan. That one...
Because your uncle was, as a shoot, was the Sheik,
yes.
The original Sheik. Legendary guy.
Not the golden Sheik, the Sheik.
The Sheik. But he was also obviously known for being a very hardcore style, crazy style. So he told you, go in the ring and get your heat back.
Yes.
And so just doing a table. Those Japanese tables, which you guys might not know, are about an inch and a half thick. They are hard to break.
Well, they're not too hard to break. They're hard to hit because they're so small. You know, you have to hit them right in the middle to break them, and it's hard to hit that middle sometimes. You know, sometimes you overshoot or undershoot.
I remember being at a show, and it took you like 5 or 6 tries to break one. And I kept thinking, like, I felt sorry for you for every time. I was like, stop.
I feel sorry for you. Listen to this. In Kawasaki Stadium, 57,000 people, I'm wrestling Luther. Me and my uncle's wrestling Luther and Hannibal. I have Luther on a table outside the ring. I'm going to do a moonsault.
So far away.
I couldn't have made it if I prayed. And I was going to do a top rope moonsault out of the ring through the table. But when I did it, my knee plastered him right in the head.
Got me right in the... knocked me out.
Yeah, knocked him right out. But it worked. And
I don't remember getting back to the ring. I just remember getting hit with the moonsault and you saying, kick out. And I didn't know where I was, nothing.
Yeah, I apologize for that, brother.
That's okay, man.
But Chris, now on all these indie shows that I'm doing now, because I'm still doing like street fights and stuff like that, only one death match, but I still do, you know, hardcore stuff and stuff like that. People can't get tables. You can't just go to Home Depot and get a table anymore. So it's just doors now.
Yeah.
Everything is like, it's like they're using doors as the new
doors.
Table.
Doors.
I feel like I'm in backyard wrestling.
You gotta build
it. You set the door on the chairs as a table.
You gotta
build it.
It's
funny because the other day in your guys' match, they said there's no tables available. I said, well, just go to Home Depot and buy one. You can't buy tables anywhere.
You can't buy tables anymore. No, you have to like order them online and like ship them to you.
So
they can't just walk into Home Depot anymore.
That's really crazy. Because I remember hearing that. I was like, just get them a table.
Or they're plastic and it's just like a trampoline when you hit it.
You bounce right off it.
So how did you have this death match? You mentioned with Nick Gage, and I had a death match with Nick Gage as well. Nick's a great guy. Once again, he didn't make it on the trip, but here's the Nick. But tell me about the match that you had, because it was a crazy match. I watched it and I was thinking, oh my gosh.
Yeah, so the opportunity was presented to wrestle Nick Gage, and I'm thinking, no way. Like, absolutely not. His Dark Side of the Ring just came out, and I tried watching it. I couldn't even get through it. It was disgusting. I'm like, I don't want to wrestle this criminal. This guy's going to kill me, right? But I knew it would create buzz. I couldn't anticipate the amount of buzz it would create. It changed my whole career. Like, I'm the Deathmatch King. I had one deathmatch, right?
That's great.
I'm like, yeah, I'll wear, like, all white, like, white pants, like, white pads, a white shirt. I'll get, like, a couple trickles of blood on there. My shirt was red. It was drenched. I was covered in blood, but I loved it. I could understand why people, I always thought, like, why the f*** people do this shit? And then when I was in there, the adrenaline and the fans and just seeing the blood and tasting the blood, I f***ing loved it. And maybe I'm f***ing sick, but it was incredible.
Let's talk a little bit about, I'm just thinking of the death match that I had with Nick and the introduction of glass, which is a whole different world as well. And obviously, Nick knew a lot about the glass, and he said, make sure you get tempered glass because it breaks a little bit easier, or like it's a little bit more marble-like when you hit. And we did a spot where we put two chairs with the glass on top, and I gave him a Frankensteiner from the top through the glass. what was crazy?
A sheet of glass.
A sheet of glass, okay. Yes. What was crazy, though, is like we said, you can't really monitor how these things are going to react. And when I went to the top and gave him the Frankensteiner, the ring moved, and this glass, it bounced up and just barely made it for him to hit it, because before it was going to fall off the chair. Like, there's no way of really knowing. You can't, like, trust glass. You can't trust barbed wire. But I just remember, like, if that thing would have fallen, like, it's just, like, you just, everything is just a second that could go wrong. But then, and then he brings out the light bulb tubes. And I remember thinking, like, have you guys ever had, have you done the light bulb?
No, I've used the light bulb one time, but I never had a light bulb.
That was it. And have you guys used the light bulb tubes?
Too many times.
Too many times, right? King of the death match. And the one thing I was told is, like, the light bulb has, like, phosphorus in it.
Oh, gases.
Which is poisonous. Yeah. So we took the phosphorus out and put baking powder in. There's a trick for you. Yeah. So it looked amazing when it blew up, but it wasn't dangerous for us. Because this is on national TV.
Well, you're a lot smarter than me then.
Yeah, I don't think they did that in GCW.
Have you done the tubes?
Yeah, a few times, of course. Out in ECCW.
Just like...
But they would just bring it from, like, Home Depot, and here we go. Hit each other.
But just that one freaked me out, because I remember thinking, like, just like you, like, I'll never take a light bulb tube. That's ridiculous and stupid. But then you get in there, and it's a death match with Nick Gage, and it's like, get sure, hit me with the damn light bulb tube. But it's a little scary, because you don't know what's going to happen, right?
Close your eyes, kid.
Trust me.
So you're talking about the glass. So I went through the glass in that match. And believe it or not, GCW doesn't have, like, a medical team or anything like that backstage. So there was a nurse backstage who stitched me up, and she told me they were dissolvable stitches. They were not, and I got infected. I got infected. And then when I went to, like, the doctor, they were still pulling glass out of my back, like, weeks later.
Wow.
It was like, you couldn't clean this out? It was horrible.
You said you still have glass in your back?
I'm sure there's still, like, some weird pieces in my shoulder, because there's, like, these little tiny pieces, and if you don't get them out right away and you heal up, that's it, pal. You know, you're fucked.
You had any glass experience, Ruby?
Not any glass experience, but I have done tubes before. I did Queen of the Death for IWA Mid-South. It was in the backyard of a strip club called the Rustic Frog. in 90-degree weather against a woman by the name of Lou Dark, who I believe is from Mexico, and she's a crazy bitch. Like, in the best way. She's awesome and fearless, and I didn't have a lot of experience with it. And I think I like tubes. That baking powder thing is brilliant, by the way. But I think I like tubes just for the pop that happens when you get hit with them. It kind of scares you and everybody else around you. So that's really my only experience with it. But yeah, that was an interesting tournament.
But it makes the sound, though, right?
Yeah, that pop when it breaks is awesome.
Let's talk a little bit about being in Japan and working with Onita FMW, and how you guys would be, the fans were terrified of Sabu and Luther, because they thought you guys were completely insane.
They weren't really terrified of me. They were terrified of him and my uncle.
Yeah.
They weren't really terrified of me. I was a baby face. You know.
But they were terrified of the Sheik as well.
Yeah, and Luther, yes.
So talk about some of that, Len. Talk about the gimmick and how you would scare the fans.
Well, I'll set it up. He used to come to the ring with like a Hannibal Lecter mask and a straitjacket. Now you take it from there.
They would basically wheel him to the ring just like the movie Silence.
No. He'd come out of the dressing room going
crazy. So I wheeled my very first time I got wheeled out. And then I just took that away. So I don't know. It would be like as soon as I run out, people would just take off. So I would just follow everybody, and it would be like hundreds of people just running.
Trampling each other. Trampling to get away from them.
Even to the, sometimes when we'd be working in the ring, I would just look to go out, and the whole side would just take off.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome.
It's like, I don't even care what happens in the ring now. I just want to do all that.
They believed in his character so much. It's really worth looking up if you can see it on YouTube. Like you said, he would just look at the crowd and they would run like Godzilla's walking through Tokyo or something.
So Ricky Fuji brought a couple of the girl wrestlers in to meet me, and they were scared because I'd already done a whole tour, and this was the second tour, and they thought that was really me.
That was really you, yeah.
That I was going to rip their face off as soon as they came in, and then they met me, and they were like super scared, but it was cool.
How did you come up with that gimmick? Did you think you needed something crazy to go to FMW? Or?
So, you know, I got the gig from Wrestling U that when they came to watch, and I didn't really have a that kind of gimmick. So
Luscious Lenny St. Clair.
Luscious Lenny St. Clair.
From Diamond Springs, California.
I got to see videos of that.
Drink it in, people. Drink it in. So I just knew, I didn't really know anything about the company at all, except for what you guys had told me. And they said it's like a scary thing. So I just sort of took that from that movie a little bit and just rolled with it. But and, you know, I just learned, like I said, when I got there, just watching what everyone else does. And as you know, with wrestling, like wherever you're at, you have to be able to transition and adapt to what they're doing.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you're not going to last long. So, and then I got to wrestle like really good people. I got to wrestle, I wrestled Sebi so many times. We didn't even have to talk about stuff. We could just basically go in and do it. And it was great. And
just a finish, you know, usually a one move finish.
That was it. And so I was really blessed a lot with that. And working Goto was easy. Working Onita was easy. And if you work Onita and you're
easy,
your
but
set.
Stiff. Those guys would kill us with chairs.
Oh, yeah. Stiff. I mean,
kill you. If you didn't protect yourself, you're knocked out.
But it's all good.
And even if you protected yourself, you got knocked out sometimes.
But, that's true.
They showed no mercy.
There's the chairs that would pop out, and then there's the chairs that you get hit 10 times and nothing would even happen.
And well, they didn't look stiff, but they were.
And Frontier Martial Arts Wrestling, like Sabu Sibs was called, so what they would use is they'd have a lot of wrestlers, but they have a lot of fighters. That knew nothing about wrestling. They would just stick in martial arts guys. My first match in FMW was a six-man with Wada.
Wada, the kickboxer.
Kickboxer.
Yeah. The worst.
The worst.
Oh, yeah.
My very first match in Japan ever. And I go to the ring, and this guy, he had no front teeth, and he wore kickboxing shorts. And
taped ankles.
Oh, yeah. All he would do was didn't speak a word English, and he didn't talk to him before. He just went out there. This guy was just kicking the shit out of
him. He hated all of us.
He hated the foreigners.
Yeah, hated foreigners.
He didn't like working.
I remember, so he's kicking me out. He's beating me up so bad. I was like, well, I'd seen a match earlier, like you said, where someone could just grab a chair. And like, so I went out of the floor. I grabbed a chair. I hit this guy as hard as I could in the head. Hard as I could. And he looked at me like Mongo from Blazing Saddles.
Why'd you do that?
And then he left me alone after that.
You guys respect.
And you guys actually work quite a bit with Leon Spinks, who just passed away. A legit heavyweight boxing champion. What was it?
I tagged with him. It was very surreal. So he didn't have any clue what was going on at all. Like, the whole time.
He thought he was coming to Japan to play. Or to box, but he goes, how are we playing tonight?
You know, we playing?
Yeah, how we playing?
So I'd tag him, and he'd just stand there and look at me. And I was like, you got to go in, Leon. And he'd just go, you're crazy. And then he'd smile at me. I was like, no, you got to go in there.
Ruby, when you talked about doing the death match, you mentioned that you had them prior to AEW as well. Is that something that you would do frequently? Would they book you as like, here's a big draw of the night, the death match, female death match?
Not really. My former tag team partner, she used to be known as Crazy Mary Dobson. She did a lot of the death match stuff. But every once in a while, when I was a mainstay at a certain promotion, they'd always get me to a point where they would kind of convince me to do a death match or a hardcore match. Ian Rotten was one of those people who convinced me to do Queen of the Death. I didn't think I was going to make it past the first round.
It's an actual tournament?
It's a tournament.
Queen of the Death matches.
Wow. they had a
king and queen, ladies
king
and gentlemen.
Yeah. I didn't win the Queen of the Death match, but it was interesting to see people actually not wanting to get past the first round. Some of the people who are just regular wrestlers who are just dipping into this every once in a while, like fighting to not win so they don't have to go to the next round. But I ended up going to the second round. And honestly, I was encountered with probably one of the most painful weapons I've ever seen in my life. It was a fans bring the weapons match. And some of these fans were messed up in the head. It was like one of those gladiator Q-tip things that you but wrapped in toothpicks.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
And the girl I wrestled didn't really speak a whole lot of English, so her and I were under the agreement. I pick something up, you don't like it, hit me, I'll drop it. You pick something up, I don't like it, hit you, drop it. But I was on all fours when she picked said weapon up. And she hit me in the ass so hard with that damn Q-tip that I had a porcupine in my ass. Like, it was just, they were all sticking out, and one broke off in my ass cheek, and then I had to have people take pliers and pull it out of my ass. I found a toothpick that was this big that was stuck in my ass cheek, and I sold it to a fan for $50 at intermission.
And you know those fans bring the weapons? They are so creative at making stuff. It's incredible.
Yeah, they are now.
Because that was an ECW trick. The fans bring the match or whatever. Yeah. I remember I was saying yesterday, I remember someone brought a Nintendo PS64. Yeah, I'm like, how much did you pay for this? You want me to hit me and Two Cold Scorpio? Like, really?
There you go.
Yeah, I use mine. But yeah. Did you have that in the ECW, some of those weapons?
Yeah, yeah.
What were fans bringing?
VCR, TV set, a fan, you know, a big fan.
Fan?
Yeah. A vacuum cleaner. I got hit with a vacuum cleaner before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One spot that I do it on a lot of shows now is I bring out a bag. You think it's thumbtacks, but it's action figures. That's what I use. And I always end up getting bumped on it. It hurts. I'd rather take thumbtacks than action figures.
It's like Legos.
That's what they do. The newer thing now is Legos.
Yeah.
Imagine that. You step on a Lego if you guys have kids and the Legos run. You step on one of those things, just one, it hurts like shit. Imagine falling on like 15 of those. And the action figures, you're falling on arms and
exactly,
legs.
Exactly, like the arms sticking out, shit like that. Oh my God.
What did you do in the match that you had, the death match? There was an action figure like display case.
It's called a Detolf. You could buy them at IKEA. And they were just filled with the figures. We used them as weapons. That match was wild because I walked in there thinking they might try to legitimately kill me.
Because it's GCW. I'm like, crowd is all around, very ECW style.
And I didn't know Nick Gage. I'm like, this guy might murder me in the ring. And like, GCW wants to get buzzed, kill Zack Ryder on Fight TV. But it was just a wild night. Like I said, changed my whole career. It's like, okay, well, I'm definitely not doing one of these again. But I got to capitalize on it. Now I'm this hated guy. And it snowballed where I do these indie shows and I started getting booed. I'm like, why are they booing me? I'm the WWE guy. They should like me. But then it was like, you know, 50% of the chance I'd get booed. Then 75%. Then 100% everywhere I go is Matt Cardona. I'm like, this is great. I love this. I'm like, let's get as much heat as possible. I got a Deathmatch King merchandise. I have a crown. It's ridiculous because everyone's like, you only had one Deathmatch. No shit, motherfucker. I beat Nick Gage and I'm the king.
That's right.
And Matt's done a great job of making a career for himself outside of the mainstream. Seriously, the guy is one of the most popular guys on the indie scene. You're your own boss. You don't have to worry about all the bullshit.
It's been fun. It's a lot of work, but I love it. I love the hustle. I love the grind. And if I'm not, you know, like, of course I want a lot of money, but I have no problem working to get it. And now we have our own toy line. And like, I've made a Nick Gage action figure where he's got the pizza cutter. He's covered in blood. Like, it's fun. It's fun to, I'm not doing it to give back, but it's cool to wrestle guys like Nick Gage or Joey Janela or Effie, these guys in GCW. You know, I beat them, of course. And then I make their figure and make money off of them.
That's my line.
And we're making Sabu.
You mentioned Nick Gage once again. And the pizza cutter, one of the great spots we had in our death match is he has a pizza cutter and literally rubs it, it's not a gimmick pizza cutter. It's a pizza cutter. And it's one of those things, well, what are you going to do? Well, just go for it. This is so coincidence. It could never happen anywhere else. So we go to break. And in AEW, it's called Picture in Picture. So you see the commercial. Yeah. And you still see the match in the corner. You guys are buzzing because you know what I'm going to say here. Nick is massacring me with a pizza cutter while there's a Domino's pizza ad.
That's great. That's awesome. That's awesome. It's just, hey.
Nobody could have ever guessed that. And they were angry. Domino's Pizza was so angry, and I was like, no, you guys should make a Nick Gage, Chris Jericho pizza commercial like now.
Yeah.
How many pizzas you sell with the Nick Gage pizza cutter? And like, you know what I mean? I was laughing so hard because, you know, you have these matches,
and idea.
All anybody's talking about is the commercial. What do you talk about? I don't know there's a Domino's commercial. All I know is I'm getting destroyed by this lunatic killing me with a pizza cutter, and everyone's laughing because of the Domino's.
And speaking of pizza cutters, you can buy the Matt Cardona pizza cutter on mattcardonamerch.com. Available now.
That's awesome.
Wow.
I love where he came prepared with this in his pocket.
Always ready, mother.
We'll be right back.
Seven, let's talk about ECW, because we were discussing it last night with Eddie Kingston and Dan Lambert. Actually had the original NWA title that Shane Douglas dropped in the garbage can. And I was explaining ECW really was a revolution. I think people forget, if you weren't around at that time frame, just how influential ECW was to basically all the wrestling that you see in this day. Do you agree with that, Sabu?
Yes, I agree, except for it wasn't a plan. I was booked one day, and it happened. And Paulie said, go to the ring, do whatever you want. So it wasn't like I had any guidelines or any rules or don't do this, don't do that. He said, do whatever you want. So I did it, and that took off. And then they built the company around that match, the match I had with Taz, a hardcore match, you know. So it wasn't like a blueprint, and then we're going to see this through. It happened, and then kept building, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was excellent, you know.
Yeah, and we were rock stars at ECW, man.
Yeah, it was awesome. I got to be Elvis every weekend.
They used to we used to stay at the Travelodge in Philly, right by the airport, and all the fans would go there. So after the show, it was just like this giant party.
Party, yeah.
And the only bad thing was that Paul Heyman would do promos. But he would do them like at all hours of the night.
Until 7 and 8.
Two in the morning, 3 in the morning, 4. So you could go hang out with everybody and have the big party, but you had to kind of still be a little bit in your head, because if not, you had to do your promos. You won't be too loaded to go and do the promos for TV, right?
Yeah. It was on 17th floor. We should do the promo.
17th floor, yep. Good memory, exactly. Yep. And Sabu and I only wrestled, it's so crazy, we wrestled once in our entire careers, one time. Paulie sold that match.
Forever.
For 10 years later.
Yeah.
Did you ever get a royalty check from that?
Oh, I
neither did I.
I almost got a t-shirt.
You know who was at that match?
No.
Tony Khan.
You're kidding me. Yeah. So was my agent, Josh, he was there.
Really?
Yeah.
There you go.
Lulu Temple.
Yeah, Lulu Temple in, what was it called?
Or I think he told me that, but yeah.
Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania.
No, Lulu Temple, and help me out, somebody. I don't know what. It wasn't Jim Thorpe, though.
That's actually where we wrestled, though, the Lulu Temple.
Yeah, it was a Jewish
temple. There's a
name
for you. Lenny, you mentioned that you did the very first barbed wire match in South Africa. Tell us just, what was it like even wrestling in South Africa? I've never been there before.
It was crazy. We'd be in, like, tennis stadiums, 20, 30,000 people. So when I first got there, one thing really stuck out to me. So at our shows we have, or even indie shows, there's just some guys with shirts that say security, right? So at our shows, the guys are big. Indie shows, it's just whoever they can get from the front row that doesn't want to pay, they put on a shirt. I go there, and it's all these military guys with machine guns and German shepherds, and I'm like, what is going on here? Like, this right away is scary. One of the guys that was there got slashed or 27 stitches on his way back. And then they're like, oh yeah, go out and do your best heel stuff. I'm like, oh my, like I could die at this any moment. So they try to like, they throw stuff at you. They totally believe there was like, everything was super believable for them. So it was actually super easy to get over as a heel because they're right on it. And once again, you learn to adapt. We had to go down this hallway, and I would see guys would get hit with sticks and bottles thrown at them as they walked down this hallway to the dressing room. So I'd always grab a chair just before I had to go down there and just hold it over me. And you could just hear on the top of the chair as they made it by. And then everybody's like, oh, I should have thought of that. And I've been like, you guys have been here for 8 years, and you've never thought of this? Like, you got to protect yourself. But it was cool. The barbed wire match I had, the place was sold out. I think it was like 20,000 people. One thing that they didn't count on was they were selling cans of Coke, and they were all squishing the cans and making like little projectiles out of them.
Oh, wow.
So I went in there, got on the mic, got crazy heat, and next thing you know, we're just getting bombarded with like hundreds of cans, thousands of cans. The referee tried to cover me. They threw me, they took a table, and they had to like hide me underneath this table. The place had to stop because they had to clean out all these cans. They kept telling people not to throw. Like the referee got hit so much, his whole shirt was cut. He was bleeding. I just used him as a shield the whole time.
The more they say don't do something, the more they're gonna.
Yeah, they kept doing it. But The match, well, and before the match even started, I don't usually ever walk down to the ring, but this, for some reason, I did this time, and I'm glad I did, because I got there, and they had the ring all set up, but it was razor wire, not barbed wire. So that's a completely different animal.
That's wow. That's different. That's different.
That's like, okay, one's going to hurt you, but this is going to kill one of us. Right. So that's I told them they had to change it, and then they were like trying to talk me into doing it, and I was like, well, I'm not even going to wrestle tonight unless you change it. So they changed it. It went good. I got suplexed on the barbed wire a bunch of times. The local guy won, and everybody was super happy.
God.
I love it. Yeah, suplexed on the barbed wire a couple times, whatever, brother.
Yeah. The one thing is, barbed wire never scared me. I don't know why. I'm actually good with it. I love to do. I do that all the time.
The thing that bothered me about barbed wire, I remember we did a Hell in the Cell, Triple H and I, and this was when Hell in the Cells, somebody fell off the top. And we wanted to change that pattern. Like, you can't have someone take a bump off the top of the cage every time. You just can't. Every time, right. There's only so many ways you can do it. Sooner or later, it just becomes cliche. So let's go to the top of the cage, but do the finish on top of the cage. And that was kind of the transition to now that they just do Hell in the Cells in the cell. Triple H had this bat covered in barbed wire. And so I escape out of the ring. I start climbing. He grabs his barbed wire bat, which we put a loop of string on it so he could put it around his arm so he could still climb with it. And when we got to the top of the cage, now this thing, when you look at the ground looking up at the Hell in the Cell, you're like, that's not too bad. Yeah. He knows. When you stand up there and look down, oh my God, shit. Dude. I told Mick Foley, I said, you are the craziest man I've ever met in my life. Because you stand there and that bump he took, there's no way, dude. There's no way. It is like so high. So anyways, you're climbing up there with that in mind. Plus you're walking on top of the cell, which it's a cage. It's a fence. So it's not sturdy. And I'm like, this thing could break at any time. And then here comes the barbed wire bat. And once again, we didn't even bother. It's just barbed wire. And dude, he hit me with that thing. It got caught in my hair. And as he's pulling it out, like my hair's getting pulled out. But I don't want to move because I don't want to fall off the cage. So I'm just standing there. I was just ripping my hair out. I was just like, mother, why did I think of this? What am I doing? And then he gave me the pedigree on top of the cage, which, again, now you're looking down.
The cage,
and I'm thinking, this thing better hold me, man. Because if not, I'm going all the way to the mat like Mick Foley. That's all I'm thinking, with my face first. Thankfully, it held up, but I just remember like my hair is pulled out. I'm gonna die from this pedigree. I was like, what am I doing up here? I want to be down there with you guys.
Sounded great on paper, though.
Sounded great on paper, exactly. When you're talking about the match you guys just had in AEW on Rampage, what kind of feedback did you get from that? Because it was a great match, but it was really violent.
It was a mixture of a lot of different things. For some people that have been fans of mine for a while, just mainly from TV on, it was a different side of me that they've seen covered head to toe in blood, and it was a little bit more of a badass like visual that they were waiting for. They were waiting for that from me. But like I said, another part of it was just a lot of people being upset at women being covered in blood. Yeah. And
they weren't upset that you were beating the shit out of each other.
Didn't care about that. They just cared. I think because, too, I bled a lot, a lot. And I was concerned that I wasn't going to before. And I couldn't see. Like, you could see one of my eyelids was just, like, stuck down like this because it had just molded to my face. But a lot of people, and it didn't make any sense to me because we do have quite a bit of blood on AEW TV. Like, you know, Mox bleeds all the time and a lot of people bleed all the time, but people were just up in arms about it. It upset me a lot because myself, along with the three other amazing women that were in that match, busted our ass in that match. And like that is what the focus was, and that upset me. But it also kind of did make me happy that it started a discussion. It started a dialogue as to, why are you mad about this? Are you mad that it's blood? Or are you mad that it's a woman that's covered in blood? And so just to get that conversation happening, to get people to really have to defend why they're upset about it. So, you know, it was a mixture of a lot of different stuff. But I think it was a big match for me, and honestly, I think it's helped me, you know, kind of get to that next level that I've been trying to get to since I got here.
I think it's a lot of trust from the company and from Tony to put you guys in that position, put you on last, you know, main event. That's always a big feather in your cap for sure as well.
Yeah, main event of Rampage. So they've seen, you know, everything at that point, and you're like hoping and praying that they've got it still in them to get behind this, especially when you're doing something as crazy as what we did.
Do you remember in FMW, I don't even remember this, remember those little soy sauce?
Yeah.
Did you remember? Tell that story. That's a great one.
So do you remember, like, it was Big Titan. He didn't like
He didn't like
color.
The juice, right.
Hated it.
Didn't like color.
He was very shy about it. So I remember we go out to eat, and we had these little plastic, little fish shape, and there was plastic soy sauce.
Oh, yeah. Came with ramen or something.
Yeah. And so
it's a little fish that's filled with soy sauce, and you squirt the soy sauce.
He came up with this idea. He would put fake blood in that, and then try to tape that onto his wrist. But it would be just this giant plastic thing off his wrist hanging out there. And then he tried to squeeze it onto his face. Remember? That was
I remember.
I was like, dude, that looks ridiculous.
Using the little fake blood squeezy thing to shoot it on there.
So he did that a few times. I think he got told not to do that.
Yeah, because it became pink on their shirts.
Yeah.
That's how they knew.
They could see through it.
Blood.
Really?
Real blood turns black when it gets old and crusty.
And then Onita sent the word over like, hey, let's not do that.
But I said... fake juice is this too because it's intentional. You know, this ain't real juice. I'm making myself bleed. You know, same as using fake blood. I see no difference in it other than people don't want to see fake juice. You know, they want to see real blood, but it's, the way we get it is not on the up and up. You know,
not always.
Not
sometimes.
Always. Yeah.
You mentioned something about starting this whole. Line of action figures. How did you start that? Because I even saw downstairs there was Hornswoggle action figures and all these action figures. It's not really a deathmatch question, but how are you able to do, how do you manufacture these? How do you do this?
Yeah, so I love action figures. Never grew out of it. I've had many Sabu, Chris Jericho action figures in my collection. But once we got released from WWE, all these smaller toy companies were reaching out. Like, oh, we want to sign you to make your figure. And I would do it. But, like, it was taking so long. And I'm like, there's got to be a quicker way to do this. And I want to be in control of it. I love not answering to anyone but myself. So I'm like, let's just make these figures. And we figured out how to do it. And we've made like 40 figures in the past like 2 years. Just signed on Sabu. So that's going to be a bloody variant too. But it's a lot of fun. And it's cool because, you know, it's something I could sell at like my gimmick tables. I can sell signed ones. And we can sign these legends or up-and-coming guys that I wrestle on the indies. So it's a cool, you know, it's fun for me. And it's fun to make money too.
It's great to make money.
I love money.
One thing we haven't discussed as we start to wind down is thumbtacks. That's become kind of the in vogue thing right now. Did you ever do thumbtacks?
I did them one time with Abyss, but not a thumbtack match. You used it in the match.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, thumbtacks, you mentioned having the toothpicks stuck in your ass. So I did, this is great. So I did a match with Mox when he was Dean Ambrose, and it was called the Ambrose Asylum. It was a cage match where we put all the weapons surrounding the cage. And it was Mox's idea, but he really wanted to use thumbtacks. And so he's like, I said, yeah, I talked to Vince, and he likes the Ambrose Asylum. He's like, did you ask him about the thumbtacks? I'm like, dude, if you want to use thumbtacks, you go ask him. Okay. So he goes and asks him, Vince said we could use thumbtacks. Like, oh, very cool. So I'm like, well, then, you know, you'll take the bump in the thumbtacks and everything will be great. And then Vince decided that he wanted me to lose. He changed the finish. So then I'm like, well,
you got to take the bump.
You can't take the bump in the thumbtacks and still win. Like, because everybody knows what it feels like to get, you know, stabbed with a thumbtack or whatever, right? You know, or like a needle or something like that. But people might not know what a suplex feels like or, you know, a power bomb, but everyone knows that feeling of getting poked. And I thought, well, this has to be the worst thing that could possibly happen to you. Like, it has to be. Like, if you fall in thumbtacks, this has to be the end of it. So I'm like, I have to take the bump in the thumbtacks. And I was like, I didn't want to do this, but whatever. So I remember I called Bubba Bully Ray, and I was like, have you ever taken a thumbtack bump before? Yeah. What's it like? It sucks. Tommy Dreamer. Hey, Tommy, you take my thumb out. I was like, it's terrible. It's awful. It sucks. So I'm like, wow, this is really not going to be good. So we do the match. He pulls the thumbtacks out. Like you said, it always has to come in a velvet bag. And you pour it out, and it's just like, oh. And so we did a couple things. I jump up for the code breaker, and he throws me down. There's a meme that somebody made of me falling into the bar, into the thumbtacks, because I'm kind of like, and they made all of these different scenarios with Chris Jericho like this, like like the Beatles walking down Abbey Road and Chris Jericho's in the middle like that, or like you name it. And it reminded me of like, if you've seen the Titanic, and he says like, when you jump in the water, it's so cold, it's like being stabbed with 1,000 needles. That's what falling on thumbtacks is like, literally. Yeah. And the worst part of it for me was in your hands. That's the worst, because it really is like a lion's paw getting the thorn in there. And pulling those out was so painful. So I go to the trainer's room to get all these off. And literally, they're pulling them out one by one. And they get to 68 thumbtacks. Like I said, put them in a bucket. Let's count them. I go to sit down to take off my jeans, because you got to wear jeans for a street fight, brother. And I sit down and it's like, mother, what's that? One tack in my ass to make it 69 tacks. And I remember somebody was like, 69 tacks? Are you just saying? I'm like, no, it literally was 69. Well, why don't you just say 70 or 68? Because then it's not real. It was 69 tacks, 69. Yeah, it's true. 69 tacks. That's what it was. So, that last one got me right on my ass, man. Those things will bite you. Have you done the tax?
Yeah, that was the end of of the street fight, which honestly, one of my favorite bits of commentary was when Ty went to go pick up the velvet bag, and you from commentary went, "That better be a snake in there." It made me laugh so much watching it back. But yeah, the hand, it's the worst. It hurts so bad. I've done tacks before that, and honestly, to me, it's pulling them out, I feel like, hurts. Maybe it's because it's a longer, more tedious process of just one. Instead, you're just in, like, all at once, and then it's just this monotonous pulling out, and it's just, it just hurts so bad, and your nerves are shot after that. So it sucks. Attacks suck, but out of the hand is brutal.
I just had a tough enough street fight against season one winner Maven, one-on-one. Oh, right. And he used a staple gun to staple an 8x10 to my head. And like, I got the piece of paper off, no problem, but I could not get the staple out of my head. And then Tommy Dreamer called me. He's like, "You're not supposed to use real staples." I'm like, "What?
What do you use?
What do you use?
What are you supposed to use?"
He said they would put gum, and then it would just make the noise.
I don't know if that's true,
but I used the real staple, and I couldn't get out of my head.
I've never done that.
Last few questions, Sabu. Did you ever involved like any type of like a fan riot where fans kind of like got involved in anything like that? I know in Japan that would happen from time to time.
Yeah, that happened with the Japanese mafia in Japan, but it hasn't happened that many times in the States. But it happened me defending my uncle, not them coming after me.
With the Japanese mafia?
Well, Japanese mafia at that time was coming after Tiger Jeet Singh. Were you there?
Yeah, I was there.
They were chasing Tiger Jeet Singh.
They had to hide him and sneak him out.
Yeah, and he left me hanging there, and like 50 mafia guys kicked the shit out of me, and Lenny, Mike Awesome, and I think Horace Boulder saved me.
That's right. Add to that story. You've told me that before.
So was it Tiger? He hit one of them with his sword or something?
Yeah, he whacked somebody with a sword.
Tiger Jeet Singh?
Yeah.
And there was like 50 mafia guys there, and they said stay away from him. And we didn't really pay attention, but we didn't want to go up and whack him with a sword, you know. And he did, and then ran to the dressing room, right?
Yeah, he took off, left us all there.
Left us there.
Yeah.
And we took the brunt of it, and then I got took down and got the shit kicked
out. Everybody got like, everybody got sort of misplaced around because of
I ran down this hallway, and there's a door down this hallway, and it was locked. And I turned around, and a chair went wham. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, like 10, 15, maybe 50 mafia guys beat the shit out of me.
But when everybody else got there, they scooted like mice, gone.
Yeah, most of them did because Mike was throwing them.
We're twice the size of them, and they're just gone.
But One riot, not a riot, but an altercation I had was on my way to New Japan down the aisle. A fan pulled my turban off, and I jumped the guardrail and started beating the shit out of this guy. But the thing was, it was the wrong guy. The guy who did it ran away, but I couldn't catch him, so I grabbed the guy next to him and beat him up. So that almost caused a riot, kind of.
Right out of Slapshot.
The monkey wrench on him. And when you do the GCW, like you mentioned, you're just walking to the ring even. The fans are just right on you.
Oh, there's no security. They hated me. And then after I beat Nick Gage, they threw like tons of shit, like bottles, cans. Someone threw a real pizza cutter at me. I didn't realize until like later when like they were taking pictures of what's in the ring. Like someone threw a pizza cutter. Could have killed me, but I loved it. I thought it was great. Like, was it dangerous? Sure, but in the moment, I'm like, these people hate me and I absolutely love it. You know, it was great.
I always wonder what fans were thinking when they would get involved that way. I remember we did Raw in Las Vegas, and it was me and I believe it was me and Taker against Rock and Austin. And I was looking at Austin in the ring, and I looked away for a second. I got hit right in the side of the head. And I remember thinking, how did Steve get down to the floor so fast? And why did he hit me so hard? And I turn around, and it's a fan. And I was like, oh, dude, I run back. And as soon as I go to punch him, they cut the cameras. Like, cut, 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 to the other angle to show Taker just standing there. I can wallop this guy. And then I took him against the guardrail, and I was just beating his ass, and Austin came out. He's like, calm down, kid. And I was like, how crazy is it when Steve Austin is the voice of reason?
Right.
Yeah, I was like, what are you thinking, man? You know what I mean? You ever been attacked by a fan?
No, I've been at a few shows where a couple fans ran in. I was at the Hall of Fame when Brett got attacked by that fan.
Wow, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I was there when that happened. That was crazy. And it's also crazy, us as wrestlers, how we're so conditioned to run-ins, that this man got through a sea of wrestlers to get to him, because we all have to buffer for a second and be like, is this supposed to happen? But Ronda Rousey's husband is not, and he was the first one in the ring to take that dude down.
Right on.
And then the other time was in NXT. It was at a house show one time, and this dude was drunk and decided to get in the ring. And the match that he chose was mind-blowing to me, because it was with Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly versus, yeah, out of all the matches you choose, it's the two guys that are conditioned, trained martial artists and kickboxers and shit. Like, terrible choice. And Kyle destroyed this man. Kicked him so hard in the face. It was crazy.
Yeah, it's like you said, don't come in the ring, guys.
Don't do it.
Please. Last few things, Sabu, I mean, obviously we mentioned it being a pioneer, just not even just from death matches, but just as a high flyer. I mean, you're always so creative and so inventive, and you went for it, man. And sometimes if the rope wasn't there to help you stand and you fell and you just kept going, like what you had such a great creativity in that ring. What was your mindset? Like, you were just like this crazy stuntman, high flying.
I didn't do anything in the ring that I didn't practice. I wasn't a crazy stuntman. I was a calculated wrestler, I would say. I'm not a stuntman. I'm not an actor. I'm a wrestler, a pro wrestler. I amateur wrestled, but I don't brag about that. But I do brag about I'm a pro wrestler. And what am I talking about? No, but I didn't do anything.
It's your creativity.
The trick was to make everybody think I'm crazy and don't know what I'm doing, but not the boss. But so Vince and a few other guys thought I was really out of control, which meant I did my job, but not really to them, because they thought I was out of control, but I wasn't. But I never did any bump I didn't already do in practice over and over, you know.
With the chair and the triple?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That wasn't spontaneous. It just looked that way. I practiced that for months before I did it, you know, until I had the confidence to where I know I could stand on the rope without falling. And sometimes I would get criticized for botching. But I tell you, half those botches was a work. You know, half of them, I planned those. You know,
you planned them?
I planned them.
And why would you plan them?
Because if I wanted the guy to stop me, and I don't know, I would stop myself, you know. And that way he can get back on me without me having to do any, you know.
Very smart.
Yeah.
You missed the move.
Exactly. And then sometimes I'd miss a move on purpose, then I'd miss a move on accident, so I kind of look like a f***ed up match. But not all the time. But a lot of times when I miss that move, I did it on purpose. You know.
Very, very interesting stuff. Last question for you guys, just in general. What's your favorite match that you've ever had? What's you, Matt? Well, Ruby's thinking.
I mean, I'm not just saying it because we're on this death match panel, but I think it is me versus Nick Gage because it totally changed my whole career. Because if I didn't do that match, I'd be doing random indies right now with no buzz. I'd probably be miserable, not making money. But now, like, I'm so busy. I won the Independent Wrestler of the Year, which is ridiculous to even say. But this is like the most fun I've ever had in my career, just doing this indie run and always trying to piss you people off. And hopefully it's working. But yeah, I think my favorite match is the match versus Nick Gage, because even from that match, like, we've made two sets of action figures from it. Like, these two different companies have made, like, Nick Gage was Macro 2 packs. And it's like, what the f***, all of this stupid death match? But it changed my whole career. So thanks, guys, for supporting.
Hell yeah.
And he's up for the Jericho Cruise Oceanic Championship tonight versus Flip Gordon.
Yeah.
Gotta watch that.
I'm gonna kick Flip's ass.
Yeah. Ruby, did you come up with something?
Yeah, I have a few for different reasons, but probably the two that stand out is definitely that street fight. That street fight, we put everything that we had into that.
It was a great match.
I'm so lucky to have gotten to be alongside the locker room that I am. And honestly, another one, even though I almost got booed out of the damn building, was my match with Chris Statlander in Las Vegas for the Owen Hart tournament. But I'm still waiting for that one match that I can always know immediately that's my favorite. Like, I have so many for different reasons, but I'm still waiting for that one that's just the one that I feel the most. So I'm excited to get it.
So far, so good. How about you, Luther?
I like have so many, actually. Like, lots when, actually, when we were young wrestling, I still think about those. I've had lots of good ones with Sabu. But genuinely, I would say my favorite matches are every match I get to have with Serpentico. He's, like,
aww,
the best
part of
me.
Aww. Yeah.
How about you, Sabu?
I would have to say RVD. Or the Big Show. I like wrestling the Big Show.
The Big Show?
Yeah, I loved wrestling.
Really?
Yeah.
When did you work with Big Show?
Early in the ECW, WWE thing on, what was that, Sci-Fi Channel? Yeah.
So why did you enjoy working with Big Show so
because
much?
Because he did things I didn't do, and I did things he didn't do, and that's what I like. I don't like tit for tat. I do my thing, you do your thing, and then we have a match. And my thing isn't nothing he does, and there's nothing he does that I do, you know. So that's what I enjoy the most of. That's why I want to wrestle. If I could have my dream match right now, it would be against Brock Lesnar, because he wrestles exactly the way I would want my opponent to be, you know.
Well, guys, it's been great talking to you. It's been great talking to Sabu. Much respect for Sabu right here. Lots of sacrifice. Lenny, Matt, Ruby. Thank you, guys.